Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. The European Union's confirmed it will launch retaliatory tariffs against the United States on Friday. Trade Commissioner Cecilia Malmström says they'll include the targeting of American goods, including denim, motorbikes and bourbon whiskey. It's a response to the Trump administration in Washington imposing steep tariffs on European steel and aluminium. UK Prime Minister Theresa May has strongly criticised the separation of migrant parents from children at the US border with Mexico. She's being urged by some MPs to cancel an upcoming visit to the UK by US President Donald Trump over the issue. But Mrs. May says that trip will provide her with an opportunity to talk to the president about it.
The pictures of children being held in what appear to be cages are deeply disturbing. This is wrong. This is not something that we agree with. This is not the United Kingdom's approach. We have a long and a special and long-enduring relationship, long-standing relationship with the United States. And I think it is right. There will be a range of issues that I'll be discussing with President Trump. And I think it's important that we welcome we make sure that when we see the President of the United States here in the United Kingdom, we're able to have those discussions. That means that when we disagree with what they're doing, we say so.
Meanwhile, to help unite the bloc on immigration, the European Union is considering external asylum centres. The proposal comes as politics over immigration in Europe are as polarised as ever, as Kevin Ozerbeck reports.
During next week's EU summit, EU leaders will discuss the idea of setting up asylum centres in North Africa. After seeing a leaked document, The Guardian reports the EU would want the centres to determine if an asylum seeker is an economic migrant or if he or she is a refugee in need of international protection. It's not clear yet in which countries these centers would be placed and if any North African countries would agree to the proposal. Immigration has returned as the number one issue on the EU agenda. Last week, more than 600 migrants were refused entry in Italy with the new populist government in power. And in Germany, Chancellor Angela Merkel's coalition is in danger if she doesn't find a migration policy different factions can unite around.
The Trump administration's withdrawn from the UN Human Rights Council, accusing the body of entrenched bias against Israel and allowing human rights abusers as members. US Ambassador to the UN Nikki Haley has long criticised the 47-nation body, Harry Holton reports.
The Trump administration's decision to quit the Human Rights Council will be seen as another step back from the world stage for the US. But Ambassador Nikki Haley said the body made a mockery of human rights with its focus on Israel's record and with members such as China, Cuba, and Venezuela.
For too long, the Human Rights Council has been a protector of human rights abusers and a cesspool of political bias.
The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said he would have much preferred the US to remain in the council. Harry Horton, Washington.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks very much, Ollie. Welcome to Wednesday's programme. Hope you're well. Good day today it was. I've had a good day. Hope yours went well. It's the 20th of June 2018. Your Richie Allen Show. Start tweeting the programme with your comments now. At Richie Allen Show is the Twitter handle. I think I've got a good old show lined up for you tonight. You'll be the judge of that. More details on that in a second.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, we've heard a lot about internet addiction this week. We've heard a lot about mobile phones being banned by schools this week and today. I'll be joined this hour by Dr. Phil Reed. I like Phil. He was on the programme around about this time last year. He's a professor in psychology from the College of Human and Health Sciences at Swansea. Really want to talk to Phil. He's going to be talking about how internet addiction is altering our brains. And no better week to be revisiting that subject than this week. Dr. Phil Reed, this hour. And later on in the second hour, my old friend Robin Falcoff will be on. She's been practicing natural medicine, drug-free medicine for many, many years. She's also got a great radio show on Revolution Radio. We'll be talking geopolitical events. We'll be talking the United Nations Human Rights Council, the United States. We'll be talking about child migrants in cages, Donald Trump, and all of that. Robin is a supporter of Donald Trump. We'll get into those issues with her in the second hour of the programme. And I'm not going to give you the Twitter details again because I'm sure you know them. Tweet the programme with a comment, and when the tweets come in, I will read them out. So it's Wednesday's programme, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv and richieallen.co.uk. The programme is streamed live round the clock on TuneIn Radio as well. Right. Well, Hayden Hewitt, friend of mine, colleague, was on the programme last week, maybe the week before, maybe. And we talked about something very serious. We talked about the 20th of June, which was today, and that the European Union would be voting on Article 11 and Article 13, rules governing the internet and changes to the way the internet works. Hayden was saying that if those rules which deal with copyright, if they were approved, Hayden said it basically destroys the internet as we know it and is a massive nail in the coffin of free speech and freedom of expression. Guess what? The European Union Committee in question has indeed approved two new copyright rules, the ones that we talked about last week, Article 11 and Article 13. Now, Article 13 has been roundly criticised by campaigners, many of them well-known people who have worked in the internet arena for many, many, many years. They are saying that from now on, well, coming soon, because of this vote, coming soon, internet companies will be forced to ban memes because all websites will be required to check everything posted by you against a database of copyrighted work. And if you are deemed to have infringed copyright, your post will be flagged and it will be removed. Now, The Independent writes today, sadly no longer in print, sadly only online these days, sign of the times. The Independent reports memes, which often use images taken from films or TV shows, could be removed by websites. Campaigners have said that automated systems at YouTube have taken down innocent posts in the past. Now it's going to be on steroids with this new legislation, with this new vote. Some sites might not be able to maintain the new complicated infrastructure and they might not be able to function. Companies and sites have already had to shut down, according to The Independent, as a result of the European Union's new GDPR data rules. So a host of internet experts have opposed this. A lot of them, like Jimmy Wales, Wikipedia co-founder, Tim Berners-Lee, who's the man credited with creating the internet, they've said this is terrible. By requiring internet platforms to perform automatic filtering, all of the content that their users upload, Article 13 takes an unprecedented step towards the transformation of the internet from an open platform for sharing and innovation into a tool for the automated surveillance and control of its users. And that was from an open letter published by more than 70 experts, including the ones I named. This is terrible. For programmes like this, there are other programmes like this, for independent journalists who put information in the public domain through blogging, through their websites, this is terrible. I'm going to park it for now. We might get into it more on tomorrow night's programme, but it's an issue that's going to run and run in the weeks and months to come. Other big story of the day, we'll take a little trip over to Sky News now, shall we? Big story of the day, Anna Botting at Sky News reports. You'll hear her talking about the Brexit. This is the big story today about the meaningful vote and the amendments. And Parliament today voted on amendments suggested by the House of Lords to the EU withdrawal bill. You're going to hear from Anna Botting at Sky News. You'll also hear the Brexit Secretary David Davis. And you will hear Tory rebel and staunch Remainer Dominic Grieve the former Attorney General, Anna Botting, first.
The government has avoided a revolt over Brexit following last-minute concessions to Tory rebels. Ministers were facing the prospect of a defeat over their opposition to attempts to give MPs a meaningful vote on the final Brexit deal in the event of a no deal. But last-minute assurances from the Brexit Secretary David Davis led to lead rebel MP Dominic Grieve pulling support from his own amendment.
You cannot enter the negotiation without a right to walk away. If you do, it rapidly ceases to be a negotiation. So the Lord's Amendment undermines the strength of the United Kingdom in negotiations. Now, there are plenty of voices on the European side of the negotiations who seek to punish us, let's be very clear, and to do us harm, who wish to present us an unambiguously bad deal. Some to dissuade others from following us, and others who would do so with the intention of reversing the referendum or making us lose our nerve and rejoin the European Union. If it undermines the UK's ability to walk away, this amendment makes this outcome more likely.
So that was Brexit Secretary David Davis, who said, and who could argue with him, the Lords can't force the government's hand. The Lords can't introduce amendments that would make it impossible for the government to walk away with no deal, because it takes leverage away from the government, right? So here's Dominic Grieve, the former Attorney General. He is a staunch Remainer and led the rebels today and in recent days. Dominic Grieve.
The meaningful vote I was seeking was never a meaningful vote of a mandatory kind. It's what the House of Lords sent us back and what we considered and what then led to the negotiation with the government. Of course, I realise there are going to be people who, because above all they're so passionate about Brexit being a bad thing, which I have to say I share, I think Brexit's a really bad idea. They keep on hoping that there will be one of these turning point moments in the House of Commons where suddenly Brexit will collapse because the government loses on the vote. But I'm afraid that's simply not the case.
It is the case. Dominic Grieve, there, the Attorney General.
What kind of...
I don't know, Amy, I just don't know. Well, Sky's political editor Faisal Islam explains it, or does he? What are the concessions then? What are the concessions? What are the concessions given by Theresa May today that prevented the rebels from voting against the government? What concessions did she give to Dominic Grieve that led to Grieve supporting her today? Answers on a postcard. Well, Faisal Islam tries to explain it.
You're absolutely right. It did require a form of concession. It wasn't the biggest concession in the world. It wasn't written into the face of the bill. It was a written ministerial statement that appeared about 20 minutes again before the debate began. And it sort of attempted to... It all hinged on the idea of whether or not this meaningful vote, if it comes in January, whether or not the Commons could change it, whether it was amendable. That's what this was about. Because in theory, that would give the Commons the power to say or to indicate pretty clearly to any government that was planning on no deal, no, you can't. We've got better ideas. You can extend Article 50. Maybe join a customs union in the interim. We don't trust the power that you have. That was the intention. And essentially what the government said was they conceded that it possibly could be amendable if the Speaker agreed to it. Now, if you look at the statutes of the House of Commons, it's pretty clear that a neutral motion, as it says in the motion, is not amendable. So it requires some sort of change of procedure. So it looks like it would be pretty unlikely that you'd be able to amend it, but certainly some of the Remainers think that it is a sliver of light for them, that they've won a small concession, but in return, the Prime Minister got her bill through.
Did you understand any of that? No? Well, I think you're probably not supposed to. Jesus Christ, it's anybody's guess, maybe. Both sides are claiming victory. Stephen Hammond is a pro-European Union MP who eventually sided with the government. He said ministers had agreed to give Parliament a real say on the outcome of the negotiations. But International Trade Secretary Liam Fox said nothing had changed and the option of a no-deal Brexit had been left on the table. Who's telling the truth? Well, before this vote today, the actual debate was centred around what would happen in the event of three separate Brexit scenarios. those scenarios being if MPs vote down the UK-EU Brexit deal, or if Theresa May announces before January 21st, 2019, that no deal has been reached. And thirdly, if January 21st passes with no deal being struck. So, under those circumstances, the government said today, a minister will make a statement in Parliament setting out the proposed next steps. MPs will then vote on this statement, and according to the government, this vote should be on neutral terms, with MPs simply noting what has been said. Do you understand any of that? But an amendment backed by the Lords on Monday went further, saying that MPs should have to approve the minister's statement. And the Department for Exiting the European Union, headed up by David Davis, has now conceded late in the day that ultimately it will be up to Commons Speaker John Bercow to decide the matter at that time. Lovely. John Bercow, how wonderful.
Get a grip of yourself, man. Yeah. Come. Take up yoga, you'll find it beneficial, man.
We're not going anywhere. It's a circus. We're never leaving. We were never going to leave. We never will leave. Alan Sugar, Jewish businessman, Zionist, unashamed Zionist, it must be said, host of The Apprentice, which was an American television show, hosted, of course, by Donald Trump. It's been on in the UK for many years now, and he presents it. Well, he's been criticised today for an unhelpful and ignorant tweet where he compared Senegal's World Cup team to sellers on the beach in Marbella. So what Sugar did was he posted a picture of the Senegalese team, and next to the team he put pictures of sunglasses and handbags. He thought this was amusing. Spends a lot of time in Marbella, does Sugar. I never met him when I was in Marbella, and I lived on the Costa del Sol for many years. We didn't move in the same circles. What was he trying to say? Well, he was trying to say that all black people look the same. Maybe, I have no idea. No idea whatsoever what he was trying to say. If you live or have lived on the Costa del Sol or visited there frequently, you will, from time to time, in fact, you'll quite often meet young men hailing from Africa and elsewhere, but largely from Africa, selling handbags and compact discs, I sound very old-fashioned, and sunglasses and stuff like that. Sugar deleted a tweet. He apologised and said his attempt at humour had backfired. Now, Sugar is an arsehole. I've no time for him. He's a world-class muppet, Alan Sugar. No interest in him at all. Another one of these farting, burping lords who wants to subvert democracy and vote down the decision to leave the European Union. But that's not just the only reason why I don't like him. There are many reasons why I don't like him. He's an idiot. And he's not got much of a sense of humour. There wasn't very much funny about the tweet. I didn't see the funny side of it anyway. The BBC said that they had told him that it wasn't good enough or something of that effect or to that effect. He said he had misjudged it. There were hundreds of critical responses, including many Twitter users accusing him of racism. Twitter was unapologetic for a little while, saying it was funny and that it had been interpreted in the wrong way. Later on, as I said, he apologised. What did Show Racism the Red Card say? Well, they said this lazy, stereotypical and bigoted kind of attitude belongs to a bygone era. The World Cup is a celebration of different cultures and brings people together from across the globe. Lord Sugar's unhelpful and ignorant comments go very much against the spirit of this unique occasion and are probably best kept to himself. Show Racism the Red Card. Stan Collymore played for a lot of teams. Played for Liverpool, played for Nottingham Forest. Think he played for Aston Villa. Did he play for Leicester for a time? Played for a lot of teams. Talented player back in the day. Stan Collymore is working for RT. He's at the World Cup in Russia, which is going on right now. And, well, Stan is just furious.
Disgusted, upset, but not surprised. And Lord Sugar is seen as a liberal voice. So for me as a black Briton that can go back 30, 40 years ago when I was a child and suffered horrific racism, to see it all coming out today and people not making genuine apologies and actually going the other way and outing in the most stupid, in the most demeaning way, their racism. And this is at the very apex, let's not forget, of British society. This is a lord, he's a Jewish lord, and I tweeted later on, if this was a black Briton that would have tweeted something similar about the Israeli national team, he would be fired. He would certainly be, potentially be arrested. Alan Sugar has taken down the tweet and it will be carry on regardless. I'm not happy. I know a lot of journalists in Britain are not happy across the political spectrum. He needs to now come out and make an apology. And I'll put this challenge to the BBC. Are you going to keep Alan Sugar as the host of The Apprentice? Do you think allying elite level athletes from an African country to beach sellers is anything other than racism? And if it is racism, he has no place on British television.
He has no place on British television, says Stan Collymore. Here's the problem with that. Stan Collymore wants him fired from his job and he wants him exiled off of British television screens. Now, I don't like Alan Sugar and I don't watch his programmes. But here's the problem. Stan Collymore beat the living shit out of television presenter Ulrika Johnson in a bar in Paris in 1998. Absolutely battered her from one end of the bar to the next. Do I get to judge Stan Collymore? No, I don't. Who am I to cast judgment on anybody? Collymore has apologised for it. Apparently he sought help for his behaviour. And apparently he's come to terms with what he did and moved on. But he's on television, isn't he? Stan Collymore works for a number of radio networks. He works for RT. And he's often heard or seen even on British television commenting on football matches. You're not in much of a position to be demanding that a man is never seen on television again when you, maybe, as I said, atoned for what he did to Ulrika Johnson, maybe accepted he was wrong, maybe got held for it, but his career wasn't destroyed because of it. This is the problem I have with this Twitter PC policeman bollocks that we are seeing. Newspapers, lazy journalists are scanning Twitter for outrages and turning those outrages about the most innocuous things, turning them into tabloid newspaper stories. Do you know the joke is on Alan Sugar here? These are Senegalese football players. Many of them play in European leagues in France and in Belgium and in Spain and in Portugal, where they earn 30, 40, 50,000 euro a week for playing football. These are smart guys. Many of them speak several languages fluently. My partner ran her own business in Spain for several years. We met many of these gentlemen, often from Senegal, often from Nigeria, often from the Congo, from everywhere. Smart guys. Really smart guys. Articulate, smart, intelligent guys who, because of through no fault of their own, are in Southern Europe and are working the beaches trying to make a few bucks. Do you think any of those guys would really be offended by a fat, lazy, useless Zionist bastard like Alan Sugar? Really? A hateful, racist, apartheid-supporting scumbag like Sugar? Really? Who cares what Alan Sugar says or what he does or the memes that he puts out there having a go at Senegalese footballers? Do you think they care? They don't give a shit. So you don't care either. Ignore him. It's none of your business, number one. Stop taking offence on behalf of perceived minorities. These guys are not defenceless. They're not victims. They are world-class football players with mega contracts. Not to mention endorsement deals. Bright men, like I said, often bilingual, multilingual, polyglot. Polyglot some of these guys are. But let's have a Twitter storm. Let's demand that Sugar is banned. Sugar is disgusting. But just because somebody is disgusting, just because he's an idiot, Let's not try and have him banned, because where does that end? Where does it end? It ends with you being banned and you losing your job because somebody deemed something that you said to be offensive. Wake up to this shit. Stop taking offence on behalf of people. All you're doing is marginalising them and making victims out of them. These people don't need your help. They're well able to look after themselves. 25 minutes past the hour. Very quick break. Back with Dr. Phil Reed. You don't want to miss this. We're talking about internet addiction in around about 3 minutes' time.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structure and application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's 27 minutes past the hour. Now, this is serious stuff. The culture secretary today called on more schools to ban mobile phones. Matt Hancock said he admired those head teachers who did not allow their use during the school day, and he linked social media use with the problem of bullying among young children. Now, many teachers have spoken at parent-teacher conferences all over the country about how they feel using phones to surf the web or whatever is causing lack of concentration in children, maybe issues with memory and more besides. And we heard today from a teacher called Greg Davies at Shiplake College, who basically has taken the decision to ban phone from the classroom and from the school as well. This comes in the year that the World Health Organization has decided to list addiction to gaming as a serious health issue, and we've talked a lot about that in recent weeks as well. Let's welcome back to the program Dr. Phil Reed. Now, Phil was on this show last year. Terrific conversation we had with Phil. He's a professor in psychology from the College of Human and Health Sciences at Swansea, and he's a veritable expert in this subject. I will tweet out links to papers published by Phil and also to news articles that have featured his comments. Phil, welcome back to the programme. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Richie, and thanks very much for having me back. That was a wonderful build-up. I'm not quite sure I recognise myself from that.
You deserve it. You're like me. We have one thing in common this summer, two Celts. None of our national teams is in the World Cup, sadly.
So it is a tragedy.
It is a tragedy. And you know, if you ask the Russian Interior Ministry, we could deal with the Welsh and the Irish. We sing a lot, we drink a lot, and then we go home happy. Nothing wrong with that. Now, Phil, this is deadly serious. Since we last spoke, and it was a great chat last year, thousands and thousands of retweets with YouTube and Podomatic, huge interest in it. A lot of our, it seems that we have a very young audience, people who have got young children. What about the World Health Organization and gaming? I'm guessing you think that by them listing that as a serious disorder, you would guess, Phil, you think that's a good thing.
It is a good thing insofar as it goes, yes. It's a step in the right direction, and we're seeing lots of steps in the right direction now. We have the digital minister and the health minister all making the right kind of noises, the World Health Organization recognizing that this particular issue is problematic for anything between 0.5% and 1% of the population, which is a huge amount of people who are being disrupted in terms of their life by a particular behavior. That's all great, and we should welcome that, plus all of the other bits of news that you've been talking about in the introduction. They're all positive steps. The difficulty is we're still only talking officially about internet gaming disorder, which is not quite the same thing as digital dependence in general. It's not quite the same as an internet disorder per se. And I think the latter, people who are addicted to the internet or digital devices, are a much larger proportion than those people who are just using that as a platform in order to game.
That's really good, Phil. It's not just about gaming, it's about internet usage in general. And the head teacher I mentioned, Greg Davies, when he was speaking on Sky News today, he said that he's seen studies and evidence peer-reviewed. You know, there's a probability, he's read your work, Phil, that more than 50% of children are addicted to the internet. And he talked about them not being able to not check their phone for a ping or a beep that might take them to Facebook or to Twitter. And he also said something interesting. The Sky News presenter was a bit niggly and was trying to kind of get stuck into him. And he said, well, you know, I was in the green room earlier on, and you've got a lot of young staff here, young, early 20-somethings. They couldn't even eat a sausage roll or a sandwich, and they had their phones in their hand. Do you recognise that, Phil? Is it more than half the public, the population, more than half of children who are actually addicted to the stuff?
Well, I probably wouldn't put it quite that high. From the studies that we've done, mainly on young people, probably late teenagers, we would say somewhere around a third are showing moderate signs of problematic internet use, problematic digital use. And what we mean by that is that they feel that they're using it too much and it's disrupting other aspects of their life. That's not quite the same as a full-blown internet addiction. That's more like a habit or a compulsion, which can still be very disruptive and very harmful, but it's not quite the same as an addiction, for which you would need withdrawal effects when you're not accessing the digital device, and also tolerance. That means that you'd need more and more of it over time. But we're just quibbling now over the nature of the problem, whether it's a compulsion, whether it's an addiction. The bottom line is there is a problem, however it's caused, and it is affecting a large chunk of the population. And whether that's 10% or whether it's 25% or whether it's 50%, those figures are extraordinarily high compared to the effects that, say, something like gambling or one of the more recognized psychological disorders might have on the population. To put that into context, around 1% of the population have an autistic spectrum disorder, and we're talking 25% maybe have some mild form of addiction, and maybe 5-6% have a full-blown internet addiction. We're talking five times the number of people showing a problem related to digital technology than have a problem with almost any other form of psychological or behavioral problem.
The work you've done on this is groundbreaking. We got into it last year because I'm very interested in it. I'm more interested in it than I can say, really. And you've written about and published on what it's doing to the brain physiologically, what it's doing to the neural pathways and the negative impacts it's having. Talk about that, Phil, in layman's terms. How is it transforming our brains physically, and what sort of behaviours is that then leading to that you can observe?
Yeah, well, what you see is on an observable level with people who have high levels of digital dependence is they tend to have impulse control problems, and that goes with people who are addicted to most things. They have social difficulties interacting with people. They tend to have high levels of depression and emotional dysregulation problems. And they also show higher levels of physical disorders, so they get ill more often. Now, how that's coming about, the most likely scenario is that internet use, when you stop using those devices, is associated with a stressful withdrawal. When you get that kind of stress, a number of things happen. One of them is you get a release of a hormone called cortisol. Now, cortisol has multiple effects. It will impact on different brain regions. It's known that it impacts on an area called the amygdala, which is involved in emotional regulation. It's known to damage the hippocampal area, which is involved in memory formation. And it also is involved in changes to the prefrontal cortex, which are involved in things like attentional control and impulse control and many of those higher functions. And in addition to those impacts on brain function, it also has a suppressive effect on our immune systems. And you tend to find that, as you know, everyone knows from experience, if you're stressed, then you tend to be susceptible to illness. And that's what you find with people who are addicted, in the sense they get withdrawal effects to digital devices. That's the most likely scenario of what's happening. Now, we know all of those brain regions are, in fact, affected by heavy use of the internet. We know that all of those observable behaviors are there in people who have internet problems. And this just seems like the most likely pathway for that to be affected.
And you've looked into whether or not these impacts you've just described, whether they're reversible or not. And it's a bit early to say, Phil, is it?
It is a bit early to say. Probably it will depend on how far gone that addiction is. Most addictions are reversible. There are very good treatment strategies for addictions. We know that with almost anything. And anyone who is addicted is almost certain to be able to be helped to overcome that addiction. It's not an easy process by any means. And it requires looking at not just what's driving the addiction itself, but what are the other factors in that person's life? Why are they driven to indulge in this particular activity to such an extent? And that's true of any addiction. That's true of a substance addiction, that's true of nicotine, that's true of gambling, and it's true of digital devices. It's not just the device themselves. You've got to look at the broader context of the person's life. What is it they're trying to get from this substance or this activity that they're not getting from the rest of their life? Or why is their life so horrible that they've got to escape by using these particular substances or behaviors? So you have to look at the totality of the situation. But yes, these things can be reversible. The brain is plastic, the brain changes over time, and generally, if it goes one way, you can get around it or you can make it go the other way. It has to be extremely severe for not to be reversible.
Dr. Phil Reid is our guest. Phil's a professor in psychology from the College of Human and Health Sciences at Swansea. We're talking about internet addiction and how it's changing us physiologically, but also how it's changing our behaviours and what the consequences of that might be. But you talk about getting people to pull back from it, Phil, yet increasingly, almost on a week-by-week or month-by-month basis, everything we do is moving into the cybersphere, isn't it? It really is. And
it is.
That's huge, that. And I was listening to a doctor. I'm shocked that I can't remember his surname, because I've mentioned him several times now, but he's looking into this in terms of he's treating children specifically with gaming disorders, which is only one function of it. Dr. Richard from Nightingale in London. You know who I'm talking about.
Yes, yeah.
And he, you know, he was on Sky News the other day, and I wanted to murder the presenter because he said something very interesting, and the presenter didn't pick him up on it because, as usual, they're not listening. They're looking down a list of questions. And he actually said something about, we need to look into whether the internet companies and the gaming companies are doing things. What are they doing, you know, to make things addictive in the way that they are? And of course, the same question then deserves to go to the internet in general. Are companies and providers, are they aware of things they can do to keep people online longer and, you know, constantly checking their laptops, their tablets or their devices, Phil? Are they doing things that, you know, are they aware of things they can do to engage
I think the answer is of course. That's the business that they're in. And that's what all businesses will do. They're looking at their bottom line, and that's what they care about. They are in the business of getting as many people using this device for as long as possible so they can sell advertising. That's what they are doing. That's how they make their money. So of course they do that. There's a huge amount of research that's done in those companies. And if you see people who have worked for internet companies, many of them will say that much of their time is spent looking at ways to make the device more attractive. And this is not only true of internet gaming companies, it's true of all gambling companies. They will try to make their gaming machines as attractive as possible. And that's what the companies do, and that's the difficulty that any regulatory board has. Whether it's the government, whether it's the World Health Organization, any responsible body has to take their time. They can't rush into making a proclamation or to making a piece of legislation that's a knee-jerk reaction. They have to consider the evidence. They have to weigh it up. They have to ask people. At the moment, there's a consultation going on about social media and the effects on children's social health. Evidence is being given to the House of Commons. This all takes time. Companies who run digital platforms do not have to act responsibly. They do not have to act slowly and take their time and ponder. All they have to do is make money. That leaves us with a great problem in that we're constantly playing catch-up on a very unfair playing field, where you have on the one side people who are trying to make responsible decisions which are not restrictive for people's freedom. Nobody wants to restrict anybody's freedom, but at the same time you want to protect people. And on the other side, people who have no such issues. So they're well ahead of the game in knowing how to make these things addictive, how to make them extremely attractive. And the problem is, going back to the gaming disorder, it's almost a day short and a dollar late. The other way around. This was a problem, a major problem, when gaming is what you did on the internet. And maybe 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, that was the major source of negative impact. But it's not anymore. It's social media. That's really the thing that's addicting our youngsters to these devices.
Yeah, it is social media.
I think that's a different thing to gaming.
It's a completely different thing. I'm not in your field. I can't claim to have that knowledge, but I'm pretty sure it is completely different. Loads of questions flying in on that. Phil's going to stay with me for another 10, maybe 15 minutes. If Phil can stay with us to the top of the hour. Can you stay with us to the top of the hour, Phil?
I would love to if you want to have me.
Please, stay with us till 8 o'clock because there's some really interesting questions coming in. Are we seeing amongst those most addicted to the internet, let's put it, catch all the internet, including gaming, are we seeing a dumbing down of people? Are we seeing people a little bit less smart? Are we seeing their critical thinking faculties affected? That's come in from a number of listeners.
We're certainly seeing a reduction in their cognitive abilities in terms of their level of sustained attention, their ability to modulate attention and I suppose, develop a longer rational argument. That's certainly true. We're also seeing effects at the level of short-term memory, a difficulty in encoding information. There may be some benefits that you also see, some changes, shall we say, from this different way of processing information. But on the whole, it's fairly damaging at that cognitive level. So attentional problems, reasoning abilities are being changed, and probably not for the better.
Here's a question for you now, and this is coming in from a listener. I was going to ask you this anyway. It's a tad conspiratorial, but not that much. Don't panic, Phil. It's very interesting, this, because you've got people like Elon Musk all the time talking about how eventually we'll all be connected to the cloud. Now, I know you've heard all about this and you've read all about this. And last year we saw workers in a company in Wisconsin allowing themselves to be microchipped so that they could access a vending machine. This is a fact. There's a lot of talk about this. A lot of people pushing this stuff. Silicon Valley companies, of course. And they're saying, you know, eventually we'll all be hooked up. The BBC ran a story the other day. Cash payments are disappearing. People are going cashless, tapping the card. But in a couple of years' time, they won't be tapping the card. It'll all be on the smartphone. We're doomed, Phil. Aren't we?
It is very disturbing.
Yeah.
And the key issues here are individual freedom and responsibility. We don't all want to go down this route. And to have it imposed is clearly a violation of basic human rights. To have it imposed by companies just for their own benefit is adding yet another layer of insult, I suppose, yeah, onto this driver. And I think we've got to be very wary of just accepting these things. There was a very interesting program narrated by Morgan Freeman a few years ago on this notion of chipping employees. And there was a chap over in Switzerland who had demonstrated that by doing this, firms are actually making themselves much more vulnerable, because if you were so minded, you could place a virus into the chip that's inserted in you, which would then leap into the company's system,
yeah,
and take that system down. The more we have these digital checks, the more vulnerable we become to that type of cybersecurity breach. And I think we have to be very, very cautious about going down this route. Plus the fact that it creates a major digital divide. Older people in our society are still struggling with this, even people in their 60s and their 70s. They're not brought up with this technology. The world is changing rapidly around them, and they're struggling to deal with this. We're actually preventing them from engaging in society. Now, this is not an issue about wealth or class. It's an issue about age. And it's artificially creating barriers, excluding groups of individuals from our society because of these external drivers. And these are all coming from private companies. This is not something that we have voted for or signed up to or agreed as a society to do. It's almost just been imposed on us. And I think those are the societal debates over and above the psychological and physiological effects, which is my area, that we really need to have.
We do, yeah. I mean, I'm 43 now, and when I was in my early 20s, yeah, we had the internet and we had email, but that was about it, and you didn't spend any time online. I'm old enough to remember Encarta, the encyclopedia, and sometimes I would use that to check something out, but I never ever envisaged that we'd see what we see today with people online so many hours a day, you know, whether it's on the bus, using their phone to go online. Mr. Sin has tweeted, I mean, we've had a lot of tweets on this, it's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Mr. Sin tweets, Richie, is it internet addiction or phone addiction? Is there a distinction? The reason I ask is because I know several people who are constantly sending messages and ignoring people around him. Is there a distinction to be made between the devices that people use in terms of their level of addiction, Phil?
I think the issue with mobile devices is it's made it much easier to access the digital world, and that spreads the possibilities for engaging with the digital world. So I'm not convinced that people are ever addicted to their phone per se, that they'll take their phone out and fondle it just because they like doing that, although yeah. I'm sure there are some people who do. But I don't think that's the main issue here. It's the device that they're using to connect to the digital world in order to access the thing that they really are addicted to, whether that's the social media, whether that's the gaming apps, whether that's the pornography, whatever it is. The mobile devices have just allowed it to be much, much more widespread.
Here's a question for you, Phil. By the way, let me just remind our listeners. I'm delighted you came back, Phil, by the way. I should have invited you back sooner. Dr. Phil Reed is on the programme tonight. Not many people like Phil. Groundbreaking research into the effects of internet addiction on us, the physical effects and the emotional and psychological effects as well. Phil is a professor, as I said, at bring it up here, Phil. It's amazing, isn't it? I said it 1,000 times today in my head. Talking to us live from Swansea, by the way, is Phil. And he's at the Health Sciences Department in the college in Swansea. Yes, what's wrong with me, Phil? It's all this internet addiction, that's what it is. He's a professor in psychology.
No, it's true. It's affecting us all.
It's affecting every one of us. The College of Human and Health Sciences, of course, in Swansea. This is things I've got three things I want to say to you. And three things at one time. I'm going to ask you these three questions. First of all, Phil, you know I've had a couple of academics on the programme in the last few months from different universities. One of the things they say that social media obsession is doing is it's creating an echo chamber for people of all ages who surround themselves online with people who agree with them, so they never have arguments. And this has led to a kind of a narcissistic tendency. But it's also led to, wait for it, at universities and at colleges, people no-platforming speakers, people freaking out because somebody said something they don't agree with. Phil, in your time, I mean, you're a professor, you're a PhD, top man. Are you noticing that people are becoming less tolerant to the opinions of others and are losing their ability to robustly debate people, even those that they find offensive? Go ahead.
On the whole, I think that people do retain that ability. There is a vociferous minority who are very, very vocal who don't. And that's what we hear about. I think you're absolutely right, and your contributors who have said this are absolutely right to say that people don't go looking for disagreements when they're online. They do surround themselves by reinforcing comments, and they will just ignore the things that are not reinforcing to them. So there is that tendency there. I think the one crumb of comfort that we can take is that I think on the whole people are still quite happy to debate. And that's been my experience. I haven't really come across the notion that we should not debate issues that we find offensive. Luckily, that doesn't seem to happen very much where I am. Nevertheless, you can see that there is a growing tendency which gets very well publicized in the media. I think perhaps a little bit out of proportion.
Maybe exaggerated, Phil. Maybe exaggerated.
I think it is. It is troubling that we do have this. But I think we've got to be careful not to exaggerate the impact of these individuals, because it's almost giving them too much of a platform.
Yeah. Fair enough. Alf on Twitter, by the way, says he's delighted to hear Phil say that this addiction is more related to social media maybe than actual gaming. Gaming isn't productive for relationships or for eating, says Alf, but it can be fun, and fun is in capital letters. And Jen Crosby, who's listening to the programme, not on the Pacific Coast, I think she's on the East Coast, of the US is laughing at my short-term memory trouble there, trying to recall Phil's college. Phil, I'm going
to
go...
it's cruel to mock.
Yeah, it's cruel to mock. Don't mock. Yeah, yeah, but I can take it. I'm not a snowflake. You can abuse me all you want. Now, I said this to you last year, and I absolutely respect that you don't agree with me. Now, I'm not saying that I believe that the governments and the intelligence agencies have designed all this. I'm not, Phil. Of course, I'm not saying that. But they certainly benefit from it. You know, I mean, there was a brilliant article in The Guardian about 2 years ago on this theme of moving into a completely digital age. And it was a, you know, a kind of a half a conspiratorial article. I should remember the author, but again, it's my short-term memory gone. But it was basically saying that, you know, control is going to be very easy for those that might wish to control us, Phil, should we continue down this road?
Yes, it is. And I think that is a broader societal concern. The more that we move to things like having smart meters in our homes, the more that everything we do is monitored on the internet, then the easier it is to gain some level of control. And that is absolutely true. And I think we do need to recognize this and not be complicit in allowing this to happen. We've got to remember that we are all still free agents. We all still can choose to conduct ourselves either in the real world or the virtual world. We don't have to sign up for all of the devices that are offered to us, because these devices will come at some cost. Even though they are fun, and I agree that social media can be great fun, it's good to talk to your friends that way, no one's suggesting it isn't. It's quite useful to be able to pay all your bills online if you want to. But when that's the only game in town and there's a complete monopoly of the way we can conduct ourselves, then I think we have difficulties. So I don't buy the, you know, we've had this conversation before. I don't buy the conspiratorial view of it, largely because that would require a great deal of competence, and I don't really see much of that.
I love this, Phil. I love this, the old incompetence argument. I always get this thrown in my face. They're not that clever, Richie. You know, I sadly think they might be, but I absolutely respect your opinion on that. Phil, when I say that the work you're doing is, not only is it groundbreaking, but it's vital, I mean it. I'm glad there are still men and women like you at third level institutions doing this work, because it is vital. I'm going to give you the final word, Phil. I would say, and I've written a couple of, I'm not the greatest writer, but I've written a couple of articles on this on my own website about the phones and that. I'm not yet, I haven't yet been blessed with children. My partner and I would love to have children, you know, please God we will. I would try and keep them away from the phones, Phil. I don't know how easy that's going to be in the next 10, 15 years, but I think no good can come of preteen children spending all their times, not just playing games, but, you know, surfing the internet on their phones, on Google, on whatever. I think it's no good can come of it. Final word to you, and thanks again for coming back on.
Yeah, I would really agree with that last comment. I think it is very important that parents manage to keep their children, especially preteens, away from these devices. They can damage psychologically. And frankly, we don't yet know the full physical implications of low-wave microwave radiation. I would certainly keep very young children away from them, introduce them to the real world, not the digital world.
Phil, it was a real pleasure. Thanks for doing it again. I really appreciate you spending time with us this evening. Thanks, Phil. And I will be in touch with you again in the autumn for more on this, because it's very important.
Thanks a lot, Richie.
Lovely to have you on, Phil. Thanks. Bye for now. That was the brilliant Dr. Phil Reid. Phil's a professor in psychology at the College of Human and Health Sciences at Swansea. I've tweeted a couple of links to articles about Phil and information on the website there, swansea.ac.uk. If you have young children, share this interview when it's on YouTube tomorrow, when it's on Podomatic tomorrow. Get them listening to this. This is not a conspiracy theorist. This is an academic, a learned, qualified man who's telling you things that you really need to know if you've got young children. Phil Reid, top man. Great to have him back on the programme. Exactly 90 seconds to the top of the hour. Load of tweets came in on that. Lot of gamers, it would seem, amongst the audience of the Richie Allen Show. Lot of gamers. I used to love playing games on the consoles. I don't so much anymore, but just before Christmas, I bought the SNES. Do you remember the Super Nintendo Entertainment System? Do you remember Super Mario World? I bought the SNES, and it doesn't come with cartridges. It's just a little small, like kind of a reboot of the SNES, and it's got games pre-programmed into it, like Super Mario Kart, Yoshi's World, all this sort of stuff. I've not played it too much since Christmas, but I've played it once or twice with my mate Tez, my Salford mate, whom I hammered in Super Mario Kart. Of course I would. I didn't hammer him, to be honest. But yeah, I used to like playing games. I suppose I just don't have the time for it now. And I never found it too addictive when I was younger either. I was always able to put it away. In fact, my eyes got sore after a while, and I generally tended to play for an hour or so and then put it down. But it is worrying more than interesting when you see that story, like from last week, where the young girl playing Fortnite was actually wetting herself rather than getting up to go to the bathroom. Such was the nature of her addiction to this particular game. Good stuff, Phil Reed. Yeah, like Phil. Right, going to take a song, I think. Dr. Robin Falkov joins the programme in a few minutes. We won't just be talking about medical matters. We're going to talk about Donald Trump. We're going to talk about Texas immigration centres. We'll talk about the United Nations Human Rights Council, Nikki Haley. We'll talk about a few things with Robin. Love having Robin on. It's been quite a while since she was on the programme, so it'll be good to get her back. A little bit of music now from Jeff Lynne. And when Robin is on, you can tweet to me as well, at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, if you've got something you'd like to say about Trump, immigration, whatever. This is your Richie Allen Show.
See from your worst.
Jeff Lynne's ELO will be at the arena in Manchester in October time on a Friday and on a Saturday. Looking forward to that. Only, can we go? We can go. We can go on the Friday. We'll make it. Jeff Lynne, ELO on the Richie Allen Show, which coming up for 5 minutes past the hour. Dr. Robin Falkov will be with me in a couple of minutes' time. As I said, if you'd like to tweet something for me, to me, to put to Robin, do so through at Richie Allen Show. We will take a very quick break. And then it's onwards. Been a pretty quick week this week. Do you notice that, or is it just me? Back in two.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Welcome back. Speaking with Dr. Phil Reed in the first hour has caused an avalanche of tweets about video games. You know you're old when you say things like video games. Mention that to a child now. Do you like video games? Child will look at you like you've grown a second head. It's time to welcome my next guest to the show. She should be no stranger to you whatsoever. Remarkable lady, great broadcaster. You can check out Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, which I believe is 10 a.m. Eastern time daily. But she's also been practicing natural and homeopathic medicine for many, many years. Drug-free medicine, a certifiable expert. You can find out all you need to know about her at the website healthfreedomrights.com. Again, that's healthfreedomrights.com. Always a pleasure to welcome back Dr. Robin Falkov. Robin, welcome back.
Ah, Richie, what a pleasure. I just have so much respect for you. You're one of the best interviewers out there, and we always have a good time. I mean, what a combination. Thank you.
We always have a good time. Thanks very much. You obviously got that $20 that I slipped you just before we came on. What a lovely thing to say. Thanks very much for saying that. You remember video games. I remember video games. They're not called video games anymore. I was speaking about addiction to gaming and addiction to the internet, especially amongst young children, with a very interesting academic from Swansea University in the first hour, Robin. This is massively serious, and it plays into a number of agendas, the transhumanist agenda. Our brains are being rewired, Robin, right?
Most definitely, because it's entrainment with any type of flashing lights and signals and noises that are repetitive. And people don't realize it, that they're, you know, being put into a different state of mind. I don't know what kind of altered state to call it, but I know I played myself years ago, set myself a limit when I beat Mario Brothers in Zelda, and that was it. But I would find when I would go out after playing for hours, because it is addictive, because you think, I'm going to get it the next time, you know? And I'd be looking at other cars. Oh, I can make that point. I was having a double dialogue in my head, knowing that that's not going to happen. But it was a crossover from the programming with what you do in the game that I could see perhaps somebody that might have different impulse control problems, they could act out.
That's very interesting, because when we went to arcades, we quickly ran out of quarters, didn't we? And then we had no choice but to stop. Or in my case, it would have been 10 pence pieces in Ireland. But of course, when the consoles came out, you didn't have to worry about having a quarter, did you, Robin? You could just reset and play again and be there all day.
Yeah, I don't remember playing in arcades, but I know when they came out and friends with kids, and it just, you know, it was just quite compelling. And I wonder about the difference now when everything is so much more sophisticated with what they do with sound and light and the frequency of the light flashing. I mean, there's so much that we're just oblivious to, and that happens subliminally.
Brilliant stuff. Hey, can I ask you a very quick question? I want to talk about the massive story, of course, of the day, the migration issues in the US. And look, I love Robin. I've known Robin for years. We disagree when it comes to Donald Trump and what he is and what he isn't.
Good.
But that's fine. Listen, I won't be arguing with you, because my listeners get my opinions thrown at them every day. So I'm not going to be arguing. You can say what you want, of course. You know that. Before that, though, was out walking our dog with my neighbour Michael the other day. Michael's a great guy, Michael, really interesting fella. And he's lived in the... We live in the city of Manchester. We're very close to the city centre, only a couple of miles. It's very busy. He said he's noticed something that has developed over the last 10 or so years. Wait for it, Robin. He said he's noticed that now we are living in never-ending noise. Now, you mentioned noise a minute ago. And I said, what do you mean, Michael? And he said, well, it's constant noise. It never used to be like this. And it's not traffic. It's the noise of somebody sawing wood. It's the noise of somebody using a leaf blower. It's the noise of never-ending construction going on in houses around us. And it's the incessant noise from sirens of police cars and ambulances. And I noticed he was right, Robin. It is non-stop noise, and it's begun to bug me. Surely it can't be good for us. It must be doing something to us.
It is not good for us, and it drives me crazy. I've always been hypersensitive to noise, the noise from light bulbs that are not properly set up. The wiring is off, and you can hear, you know, noise, sound from them, the noise you can hear in the background from the air conditioning, because, you know, my family is a little hard of hearing, and I guess they don't notice it, and it drives me out of my mind. You know, they need to come in and fix that, but it's not a problem for them, so why would they fix it? They don't hear it. It's crazy, but it can be very harmful. Loud enough noises, people living near airports, they can have a heart attack. You know, it can be a weapon, a very serious weapon.
Yeah, and you know, I've begun to notice it increasingly, and I think our next move will be our final move, and it's going to be somewhere a lot quieter. Now, just as I was coming on air today, Robin has been on air herself. Again, check out freedomslips.com, Revolution Radio, Dr. Robin Falkoff. If that's all you put into a search engine, you'll find Robin very quickly, freedomslips.com. Very, very, very good show. Have a listen to it, particularly if you have the, you know, kind of opinions I have. It's always good to listen to people who think a little bit differently than you do. Now, Donald Trump has promised to keep families together over this fury, expressing of outrage that there would be separations, or there has been separations of families. Families have been separated, undocumented child migrants have been separated from adults. I'll be signing something today that's going to end that, he told reporters at the White House. These things are never rationally talked out in the mainstream media, Robin. Of course they're not. Everything is sensationalised. How do you see this issue with Texas, with undocumented migrants coming in, with these cages, these photographs of children? It's all very emotive. No better woman than you to cut through all of that spin and give us the truth. What's going on?
Most definitely. I will cut right through it, because you know what's so despicable, Richie? The pictures that they're using showing children in cages are from when Obama was in office.
Is that right?
They know it. They keep using it. They keep lying about it. And it is disgusting, because that was when he was in office. And then a lot of people are saying, because all the information about trafficking, and I know you know well about trafficking in the UK, that those kids were turned over to traffickers. You know, that, gee, this was a great bonus for people to come to the United States and bring some kid with you that you can, you know, trade in like your pass so that you get here. So what we're seeing are lies. What they're not showing, which you can find online, are the camps that are being set up with these big buildings. They look like modern buildings. You can see that they've got to be air conditioned inside. You've seen areas that they photographed where there are video games and all kinds of video games. Yeah, video games. You know, they've got their controllers, and they're all gathered around. And all this drama and exaggeration, they have staged photos and not even admitted that those photos were staged. There's one photo of a little child standing and looking up at somebody. It was a staged photo. Now, this stuff infuriates me. Just like a lot of what happened with no acknowledgement from the left about what was achieved by our President Trump with Korea. They've done nothing for years, and then they have nothing good to say other than attacks, more attacks. And to me, what I see out of all of this, and what I was asking, I had Ole Damgaard on and Cody Snodgrass on Monday, and I said, guys, you know, to me, this looks like a massive psyops that they unleashed 2 years ago just to show us, like, you see, we can do it. And through whatever means that they used, they reached those vulnerable, weak-minded people and got them to be compromised. I mean, when did you ever think of some kid in college that hears the name of President Trump and he's traumatized? He's got to go run and hide under a table with crayons? This is an aberration.
It's rubbish. It's rubbish. I'm going to endorse what you said about the photographs. This is rubbish. I spent years in a commercial radio station newsroom, and one of the things we were most terrified of, we were terrified of getting caught out like that. In fact, we had meetings about information and about our sources all the time, because the feeling was, Robin, is that if we ever made a mistake and put information out there and stood over it, and it was then proven to be nonsense, we felt, this is really interesting, that our reputations could never be recovered. Never. Even if it was accidental. It was a case of, no, you'll never get over that. You'll never be trusted again. And here we have proof that they are using photographs that have not been taken recently, that have been taken several years ago. It is disgraceful, isn't it? It's disgraceful.
Thank you. I'm glad, you know, you're aware of all of that. And as you said, you know, once somebody slings the mud, it's out there. And that is the modus operandi with these people. I mean, the Saul Alinsky methods of accusing the other side, you know, lefty, liberals, Democrats, whatever you want to say, are Republicans or blue, red. I don't know. You know, the divisions they've tried to really sensationalize and terrify and have people living in fear about them when they're ridiculous.
Yeah.
One on one. But what they do, they make all these comments like, you're Nazis, you're fascists, and they are the ones out there with bicycle chains beating the Trump supporters, setting fire to different things that Trump supporters were selling at different rallies. I mean, it is so staggering to see the disconnect, and they're out there saying that we're the Nazis and we're racist, and it's just that slinging of mud however they can, and just to keep the bad in the minds of the people that don't even bother to look further.
Yeah, because we're in a post-fact world now. Facts don't matter anymore. This is how it's been engineered. And there are people on both sides of, if you want to say right, left, or alt-right, or far left, equally responsible for this paradigm we exist in, where it doesn't, the truth doesn't matter. It's just who shouts the loudest and who says the most, I don't know, the most palpably insane thing. I'm definitely going to go along with that. Dr. Robin Falkoff is live on the line to us today from Florida. Check out freedomslips.com. Check out Revolution Radio. Great show. And Robin's always got terrific guests on it. He,
I mean, what are people going to do, Robin? I mean, with this situation where people are kind of, you know, you've got people on the right, they're, I say quite rightly, worried about the effects of undocumented migrants, how it affects US citizens in terms of getting a job and in terms of driving down wages and all of that. And then on the other hand, you know, you have people on the left, and many of them, not all of them, but I suppose many of them mean well. They say, you know, you've got to do the best you can to help those less fortunate than us, people coming from Mexico, destroyed by drug wars, massive problems. They say we always need a kind of an unskilled workforce in the States to come in, to work in the vineyards, to work in the farms. Where do you find a happy medium there?
Yeah, we don't need the undocumented workforce. First of all, it creates all kinds of problems. And where do we find the happy medium? Look at other countries and look at the rules and regulations about immigrating into another country. They're strict. The United States is the most lax, and Trump is the first one to try to do something about it, and I support that. You know, years ago, I don't know, three generations ago in my family, they came from Austria to the United States, and, you know, you go through Ellis Island. That's how it worked then. People came legally. They weren't sneaking in, and there's no reason for that not to happen. I mean, to be threatened by a march of people, they don't stop in the countries that they were going through from Central America. They didn't stop in Mexico. No, they wanted to all come and descend upon the United States and storm the border. And I just can't see anything other than criminal actions. And they did find guns and weapons, and that a lot of the people, you know, weren't these poor, helpless immigrants. Which is an interesting point, Richie. Do you remember, I don't know if we spoke about it, with the first migrant swarm that hit the EU, and I kept saying to people and saying on air, I don't get it. You know, these guys all have cell phones. They're all really muscular and great shape, you know, you can see, and they're claiming all this suffering. How do you manage a cell phone on the run?
It's interesting that, yeah, when we saw photographs of migrants arriving from, you know, people allegedly fleeing from Syria and from Iraq and places where ISIS were, you know, obviously waging a campaign of terror. Yeah, I had to acknowledge that there did seem to be a lot of young, able, fit men and not so much of the children that we were spoken about. So I am going to give you that, but I am also going to say that because of the actions of the UK, the US, France and Israel, most notably in Saudi Arabia, in funding and arming terrorist groups like ISIS, they have forced millions of people out, and a lot, you know, you're talking maybe millions of young families have been forced out of their countries and have fled into southern Europe, Italy, Greece, because they've basically got nowhere else to go. But I'm absolutely agreeing with you. In amongst that flow of people, you've got some very bad people with the intentions possibly of doing some very bad things. That's hugely problematic. I totally agree with that. It's, go ahead.
I was going to say, and we saw at the time, oh, geez, I think I lost it. Go ahead. It'll come back to me. Sorry.
Do you know what I was thinking while you're thinking of that as well?
Oh, I remember.
Right, go ahead, because I want to talk a little bit about Hillary, the devil incarnate. We'll talk about Hillary in a minute, and I've got some holy water here. I always put some holy water on my forehead when I talk about Hillary.
I'll keep my cross, okay.
Keep your crucifix handy. There's never been a more evil human being on planet Earth, at least not in my time, and I can say that with no fear of contradiction. What were you going to say anyway? Go ahead.
Okay, what I was going to say is I paid attention, and I, for years, have been out in the street talking to people in my areas. The best was when I had my girl, my dog with me. She was the best icebreaker, and people relaxed. Everybody loved her. And we had a conversation in the post office right when Obama announced that he was going to do surgical strikes and bomb Syria. And it was like, what? They've just been bombed. That's what everybody's horrified about. And you're going to bomb them again? Shortly after that was when the United States made an announcement, and it seems the majority of people on the left side don't have any memory. And I mean, really, it's scary. And that was when they announced, oh, we didn't realize that the supplies got hijacked. They went to the wrong group that the United States had provided the weaponry.
Yeah, and of course that wasn't a mistake. That was deliberate, yeah, of course.
Of course not. You know, I'm not a one position person.
No, I know you're not. Listen, look, this is why I love listening to you. You're level headed, and I know that you've got to have problems with Trump's attitude to Syria. You know, you can't be calling him, you can't be saying Assad is an animal and he's gassing his own people, because Trump knows this is not true. He knows this.
No, we knew it. Yeah, we knew it from the beginning. The reports came out that Assad wasn't. But there's another story that you might not have heard, which I've heard. And the strikes in Syria, with their phrase that they like to use, were surgically done. And they were New World Order areas where there was money being made. And they took out those areas in Syria. So for whatever it's worth, I heard that from several different sources, and it made sense. And they were surprisingly accurate with what they did, but there weren't the other areas.
I'll tell you why I don't believe that, and you won't be surprised that I don't believe it. It's not because I don't want to believe it. I don't. You know, I'm neither left nor right. I'm not liberal. I'm not conservative. I don't subscribe to any of these ideologies. I don't believe that because Trump is as influenced or as controlled by Zionist interest groups as his predecessor was. In fact, you might even argue, with the presence of Jared Kushner and with Trump's attitude towards Israel, that maybe no president maybe in recent time has been under the thumb of Tel Aviv and the Zionists more than he has. What do you say to that?
Oh, no, I'm not a political person either. I'm an issues person, and I don't agree with that. I understand what they're saying, but I think everything's been massaged, overly massaged, all about Israel and what they have to do. And, you know, there are very serious issues, and everybody claims propaganda on both sides. So I don't think he's as controlled as people think he might be. The man is full of surprises, and the man is very, very highly intelligent. He's been doing so much research into all these different areas for years, you know, paying to get the information presented to him so he could be on top of things. So he's no dummy. He might act like a dummy. And then there's all the stuff about, you know, the different codes that are being used, which I can't follow or identify. I can see when they print them out. But, you know, it makes sense. I mean, why would this time of history for humans be any different than the others when they all talked in codes? So, you know, but the influence of Israel, I just take issue with making it illegal to boycott Israel. You know, that stuff drives me nuts.
Yeah, fair enough, Robin. I told you, I'm going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the omen that is Hillary Clinton. Because whatever anybody thinks of Donald Trump, and people are entitled to their opinion, you've got to take with a large degree of salt news broadcasts featuring Hillary Clinton talking about protecting children.
Oh, God.
Right? So we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the hypocrisy of Clinton. But I also want to ask you, and I want you to be I know you will be totally honest. Later on, I want to ask you, are there things that Donald Trump promised when he was campaigner Trump, before he became President Trump, are there things that he said he would do that he hasn't done that have frustrated you? So we'll talk about those things, and then we will talk about cannabis as well, if we have time, with Dr. Robin Falkoff. Great to have you on, Robin. Stay there. We'll be back in exactly 90 seconds time. Healthfreedomrights.com is Robin's website. Check it out. Very important information on there.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Welcome back to the programme. It's 1:30. We've got Robin for another 20 minutes. Check out healthfreedomrights.com. But you can hear Robin every day. That's at 3 p.m. UK time. If you're in the UK listening to this, 3 p.m. UK time. It's 10 a.m. Eastern time. Freedomslips.com. Revolution Radio with Dr. Robin Falkoff. You know...
Okay. Can I jump in one second, Richie? Sure. I have two shows. Today at 6 o'clock Eastern, I have my second show that's only on Wednesday night. So I do six shows a week. It's What They Don't Want You to Know.
Brilliant.
The morning show is Event Horizons. And today I'm going to replay an interview, which is something that's absolutely shocking. I can send it to you to listen. You'll probably want to get this aviation attorney on about how they have undermined the process for hiring competent people as air traffic controllers. And you will think that the man must be a raving lunatic, wow, except he's not. So I just want you, this is something big. If you want me to send it to you,
yeah. Of course I do. Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, valued source, Robin. Thanks for that. And fantastic news about the second show. I wasn't aware. Event Horizon. In fact, I was listening to Event Horizons yesterday. And I was listening to it with Phil Restino, who's a great friend of mine, who's in Florida. I sent him the link to the show. New listener. Really, really good guy, Phil, in Florida as well. If he's anywhere near you, guys, you should have a cup of coffee with him. Really interesting man. But I want to talk about how is it possible to sit still? If you're in a press briefing with Hillary Clinton and you're a journalist and you've been around a few years and Hillary is talking about children and it's a disgrace and you got to look after children and children, children, children. And I'm thinking of the Reverend Lovejoy's wife on The Simpsons. Won't somebody please think of the children? And you know in that briefing room, you know that the woman standing up at the lectern is responsible for child trafficking, organ trafficking, money laundering, gun running. I mean, I could be here all night, right, Robin, talking about the crimes of Hillary Clinton.
Sure.
Imagine the madness of the world we live in. That sort of cabal, career criminal, talking about children. And, you know, we could talk about Pizzagate and, you know, child abuse and the links. Not maybe, we can't say that Hillary Clinton was involved in abusing children. We can't say that because we don't know that. But we know that a lot of people connected intimately to Hillary Clinton and to her husband are convicted child abusers. Over to you.
The information is there. The reason Anthony Weiner's laptop got attention was because the New York Police Department, when they found it, they were so horrified, they said they're not going to let it go. Somebody doesn't do anything about it, that they would, because of all of his despicable actions with underage girls,
yeah,
and because of seeing all of the classified information and information about, I guess, the dealings with 20% of United States uranium being sold to Russia. I mean, the stuff is just, it's like crazy, you know, it's like the way history is being changed. They're rewriting it as we speak. They're tearing down statues because, oh, it makes me unhappy. I don't think it's nice. You know, I can't, this weakness is terrifying because that's what they want. Weak, complacent people. And that's, if Hillary had been elected, oh my God, we would have been going through the same issues as Germany, as you are in the UK as well. And I can't see where it would have been different. And I felt from the beginning that Donald Trump was the last hope to buy us some time. And maybe with that time, we could get something done. But how do you deal with someone like her? And you think maybe it's because of, you know, her marriage and all the problems with his relationships. But then you go back and see, you know, that she was taken off a case for criminal or actions, you know, that were breaking the law. I forgot the right legal termination for
what
she did.
Absolutely, you are 100% right. As an attorney, it is proven, it has been proven conclusively, that she knowingly put a witness on the stand, knowing that the questions she put to him would be answered dishonestly. Now, that's something I know a little bit about, having sat in courtrooms for years. And I know that the legal systems in the UK and Ireland are different to the US, but there is one fundamental principle. An advocate cannot put somebody on the stand knowing they're going to lie. And she, you know, she got a known child abuser, somebody she knew to be a child abuser. But here's the $64 million question, you see. And this is why I've had people say to me that they think that Trump is pretty much, you know, when it all boils down to it, they think that Trump is pretty much an okay guy. And that when it came down to it, a lot of what he said in the campaign, in the run-up to the election, he actually meant it. Whether he could do it or not, he meant it. But we're talking about Clinton here, and the crimes, these are horrendous. I mean, this is Nazi stuff. This is beyond anything, beyond the scope of most people's imagination. So the $64 million question is, and I'm not saying this to wind you up or to annoy you or to bash you or your opinions. I'm not. But no, why, no, I'm not. Why no, hasn't no. Why hasn't Trump gone after this woman then?
Okay, there are a lot of layers to the onion, or like my friend W says, the is different at every level, and it certainly is. And you want to get a case that will stick. You don't want to go through all of this and then find that she wiggles her way out of it. So it's, look at what we're encountering right now. And by the way, there was just a headline that Trump signed the executive order for the people at the border, even though they are expecting that there'll be legislation against him because he signed it. I mean, it's so insane. But with Hillary, you've got to get an airtight case, and that's really hard. And, you know, you see all these memes going around that, well, they take me down, I'll take down half the government. Yeah, that's what we want, to take them all down. So he would like to accomplish a lot of things. I think the depth and breadth of what is under the sewers with these swamp dwellers in the senior executive services and you know, these hidden groups, it's so far reaching, it's so well established that trying to dig through that has taken all this time, and there's still a lot more to go. So when you're undermined every step of the way, and your conversations inside the White House, private phone calls are leaked to the press, and they spin it into lies, you know, it just takes a really strong person to deal with it. And with the actions that Hillary has taken, you know, we're all impatient. Everybody's waiting. You know, it's like, when are we going to see the rule of law enforcement? We're going crazy. You know, we can't wait any longer. But if it's not done right, and, you know, then we can't try her again for the same crimes.
You know, so, I'm going to burst your bubble without meaning to. Let's say that I agree with you about Trump's virtues. So, right, I do. I agree. The guy meant most of what he said on the campaign trail. The fact is, the country is owned by the Rothschild Zionist-controlled financial institutions of the world, and the new
UK.
So is the UK? Of course, it is.
It's the city of London.
Absolutely, it's worse here. And
no. But we're also owned by the city of London. That never went away.
And it doesn't matter who gets in, because whether Bill Hicks, rest in peace, whether he was right and that they show these guys the Zapruder film, or whether it's less subtle even than that, no man or woman, however virtuous, can do anything in that cesspool. The whole system has to come down. And people, yes, in my mind, people have to get out of left-right paradigm. We can vote our way out of this crap every 4 years, because you can't. You can't. Trump can't do anything about it. Obama was something completely different. Can't do anything about what's going on. And that's the conclusion I've drawn. And I'd love to be wrong. I'd love, over here, the lefties have thrown in behind Jeremy Corbyn. And it doesn't matter how many times Corbyn contradicts something that they believed, some virtue that they believed he had. Doesn't matter, they still cling on to it. Oh, he'll come good for us. No, he won't. The financial institutions, you said it, the City of London, right? The Rothschilds, these people are in control. And that's the way it is. And you and me, well, we're like flies in the ointment, if that. As well as you do with your show and Richard and your website, it's absolutely brilliant.
Richard is not on the same page as me. So he's a whole different entity.
Of course he is. Of course, but in terms of raising people's awareness about the universe and the nature of reality, absolutely fantastic. Dr. Robin Falkoff is our guest. Check out healthfreedomrights.com. Terrific lady, great broadcaster, and terrific. Nobody, I've not met too many people with an understanding of our health, physically, emotionally, as Robin does. So, this week in this country, the Home Secretary, which is the man responsible for basically domestic policing and keeping people safe in the UK and all of that, and
that
the law.
Nazi moron now?
That's Sajid Javid is his name. He licensed medicinal cannabis for two families this week of young children who've got severe epilepsy, terrible types of epilepsy, that, multiple seizures a day. The oil has proven to be hugely successful in treating them, and they're going to look into, making the oil more widely available. That can't be a bad thing, or should we be suspicious of the motivations of government? What do you think, Robin?
No, it's a good thing, Richie, and it's highly effective. But, and there's a big but, the story got coverage by Sanjay Gupta on CNN. Gag me when I say that. And about cannabis and about the brothers in Colorado and their strain of Charlotte's Web, all CBD, no THC. The most effective cannabis has a ratio for seizures. It should be a higher amount of CBD, but you need the THC present for the therapeutic benefits. And they have villainized CBD. And there was just... it's a good thing that he's approved that, and it works incredibly well, but it works even better with full extract cannabis oil that has both components along with the myriad other, 430-something things that make up the whole cannabis plant, active ingredients. But you need what comes together with it. And I'm looking at an article that was in Research and Development magazine about the only federally authorized grower of marijuana under contract with the National Institute of Drug Abuse. Now, they supply plants, and what they are working to do, which is an abomination for any herbalist, for anybody that understands, they want to standardize. And they want to standardize means they're going to find the active ingredients and grow plants that will focus on those properties. That's when you make drugs, when we've taken herbs like foxglove and made cardiac medications. And they're so dangerous because it's an isolate. And the components that buffer and make it more available and easier on the body are removed. So when they talk about doing this with cannabis, we've seen the dangers with the synthetic drug Marinol, and people have freaked out. They've had total breakdowns, being sick, thinking they've lost their minds, all kinds of horrible reactions, because it's not the plant. It's something that they've grown. So standardizing ties in with the agenda, and I know people involved with that, and I think they are the lowest of the low, working to make GMO plants because, oh, it will be better. You know, they'll be drought resistant. We can do it the old way that they've done all along. You find the plants that live in areas where there are droughts, and those are the ones you breed for the areas that have droughts. You know, the ones that survive in cold temperatures, the one that survive in hot temperatures. You know, that's the way you do it without changing their genetic structure and launching a whole bunch of things you don't know, which they're not only doing with plants, Richie, they're doing with CRISPR, the new genetic manipulations. They don't even bother explaining the multiple changes that have taken place. They just go ahead and, you know, from what they claim was an experiment on mice, on three blind mice, then they move on to a baby in utero. And they never answered the questions about why were there 1,500 new additions to the genetic information of those mice. So what are they doing is they change the plant to focus on what they think is desirable, perhaps only CBD and nothing else. You know, what kind of plant will it then be when it's out of balance?
This is terrible stuff, this, Robin, what you're describing, because everybody fears this. Everybody fears that the governments of our countries, you know, we've seen it legalized in many states and we've seen it legalized in Canada. Now they're talking about legalizing medicinal cannabis here. But our big fear is, and nobody talks about this in the national press, is who are they going to turn the production of that over to? And this is terrible. You know, they're not going to say to people, well, you can grow your own plant if you like, or your own plants. I had a lady on the program last night from Cork, and she was fantastic. She came on to talk about how she has MS and how she grows a plant. Obviously, it's illegal. She shouldn't be doing that, but she does. And she extracts the oil. And the spasms and the cramps that the MS would give her, particularly in one of her legs, using the oil, Robin, with a little bit of THC content, means that those cramps and spasms don't happen. But when this gets rolled out, it'll be big pharmaceutical companies given the license, right?
Well, that's what has to be fought. You know, maybe they will finally agree to lose one. I mean, we let the Sackler family get away with hell with selling fentanyl and creating or being part of the opioid epidemic that's just taken over and destroyed so many lives in this country. So maybe they'll give a pass on it. They have a big enough market. They don't have to have everything to destroy cannabis, but you know, I can dream, can't I?
Yeah, you can. And Robin has been talking about this for a long, long time. There's nobody better qualified than I've ever spoken to talk about these issues. And you mentioned opioids there. Bit of a scare a few weeks back. I know you covered it on Event Horizons. By the way, freedomslips.com. Robin is on again at 11 p.m. UK time this evening. And what they're not telling you, I think you said that was called. Is that right, Robin? Or
what they don't want you to know.
What they don't want you to know. Event Horizons at 10 a.m. Eastern time, 3 p.m. UK time. Go to freedomslips.com. Bit of a scare about people getting opioids in their food chain, Robin, through shellfish and stuff like that. Because there are so many opioid prescriptions being given by general practitioners that it's causing all sorts of problems coming through the food chain. Is it really as bad as that?
It's worse than that, Richie, but it doesn't have an effect where you're going to get an opioid high. It's just this low dosing exposure. I've never felt effects of chemtrails. I know many who have, but I do know many of the components in chemtrails, and it is all low dosing exposure. And when you do that, that's to make the bodies susceptible to a trigger that will come later with something totally innocuous that's commonplace, you know, that everybody will eat or drink, and lo and behold, then they're going to be really deathly ill. But you know, there are so many insidious agendas, you start sounding like a raving lunatic.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, and one of the things we've shared for many, many years is the realization that we can't... programs like this have got to find a middle ground and, you know, reach people who ordinarily would think that we were basket cases. And you've got to tailor your content to that accordingly. I mean, I'm always aware of that. I mean, I meet people who, they will tell me that, oh, my boyfriend or my girlfriend listens, but I think you're crazy. You know, I think the stuff you talk about is crazy. And I'm always polite and say, well, you know, it can't all be crazy. There must be something in there that resonates with you. But you're right. I worry about it. Here's a question that's come in. I know you're based on the East Coast these days, but you know, we never talk, and we're going to have to make this the final one because we're coming up on our time. Thanks for coming back. Dr. Robin Falkoff is on the line. Great guest. Terrific to have her back on the show. Tell me this. We don't talk so much about Fukushima anymore and the fallout from it. I understand that radiated water is still pouring into the sea off the coast there. Is this a massive cover-up? This, are the effects of this being felt on the Pacific coast in terms of...
Oh, God, that's a question. Of course, it started from the very beginning. Wow. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, good. Go ahead.
This is from the beginning. And when I cite an example of proof, people go, oh, yeah, I remember that soccer ball that was found in Alaska. It was less than a month after Fukushima. No, but Fukushima didn't get to the West Coast. Only a soccer ball miraculously arrived there with the name of some child written on it, and they went to great lengths to return it to this child. But what more does it take for people to connect the dots? They don't. And that's what's terrifying. Fukushima has been here. There were stillborn rates in Boston because of the jet stream, the way it goes on a northerly route, contamination of all the seafood in the Pacific. You know, we were on a cruise ship at the time, and when I got back to New Mexico, I bought as much seafood from Chinese markets that I could because I knew I'd never buy it again from the Pacific or anything else from the Pacific. So it's a big challenge. It's affected the air we breathe. I don't even know what to say about people in Hawaii. You know, I've asked people many times on air, and they go, duh. You know, what's between the United States and Fukushima? Hawaii, you know, who's going to be the first stop that's going to get hit with this stuff? And it is very scary when you see that the EPA, which has always been totally useless as far as I'm concerned, you know, and they are all over Trump. Why does he want to get rid of them? They never enacted anything to protect against factory farms, fracking, chemical plants, 90% of the country having contaminated water, Flint, Michigan, you name it. There's so much contamination that they haven't done anything about. And it just boggles the mind that these things, oh, well, yeah, they're going to fix it. And you're waiting years and years for that to happen. So Fukushima is real. The problems are real. You have to choose what you eat carefully. And there's contamination all over with their plans for population reduction. And you can call me a raving nut. At least I tell my audience that I know they think I'm nuts. It's real. It's stuff that's really happening. And Agenda 21, you look at what their goals are, and then you look at other cities around the states here that I've seen that already have these small apartments close to the train that goes through, you know, and they are going to be closing down these little villages and making them only walking. This stuff is in motion.
It is in motion, and contaminated water continues to pour into the sea, and the media is absent. And people who think that somebody like you is a raving lunatic, they need only ask, why has their media totally abandoned that story in the last 2 or 3 years? You can't find an article about it. Well, you can, maybe an isolated one, but the large media companies, the big TV news programs and the papers have just ignored it because they know... Well, first of all, they're told to, because if they go looking at it again, they're going to have to tell people the truth that it's basically it's an extinction event for sea life on the west coast of your country. I have no doubt in my mind. Go ahead, Robin. Last word to you. Go ahead.
There was one website that covered it, and now their last update was from November. they've just been decimated. They gave the reports on exactly what was going on each time TEPCO made new releases. So they've been, you know, wiped out. So I don't know where we're going to get real news about that. But Richie, you're a pleasure, always.
Brilliant to have you on, Robin. Folks, go to freedomslips.com. Event Horizons 3 p.m. And that's UK time, 3 p.m. every day. Robin, the program that starts at 11 p.m. tonight, remind us the details.
What they don't want you to know, it's with aviation attorney Michael Pearson. I had heard him interviewed on the Tucker Carlson show, and I went absolutely nuts tracking him down to get him on my show. He's a wealth of information, and you will think, how could they be so stupid? And then your next thought is going to be, uh-oh, what are they doing in the UK about how they're hiring air traffic controllers so they can have diversification, not capabilities, but just so that they have diversification of people in the jobs. No experience, but hey, you know, they'll be trained.
We might lose a plane or two, but in the meantime, at least we'll have equality. That doesn't make too much sense to me. But Robin, no. Listen, thanks for coming back. We'll talk again real soon with your permission. Healthfreedomrights.com is Robin's website. You'll find all you need to know about Robin there. And there is a wealth of free information at your fingertips there concerning health and a lot more besides as well. All the best, Robin. Thanks a lot. Have a great show later today, and thanks for coming back.
Thank you, Richie. Always a pleasure. I appreciate your expertise and fairness.
Thanks so much, Robin. Brilliant stuff. Right, that's about it for the programme today. Great to have Robin back. Healthfreedomrights.com is the website. Check her out. Just about out of time. Dana Durnford, of course, has been on this programme over the years talking about Fukushima. However, certain people in the United States have gone to great lengths to try and discredit Dana Durnford and discredit his work and his opinions, and all sorts of allegations have been made against him, but I don't believe them. I will invite Dana back on the programme in the near future. A big thanks to Dr. Phil Reed from Swansea. Great to have Phil on the programme in the first hour talking about how our brains are being rewired by our addiction to the internet. He talked about gaming as well. That was a fantastic chat with Phil. If you missed any of it, it'll be on YouTube very early tomorrow morning, with thanks to Simon Stewart, my YouTube manager. If you have missed any of it, check it out on YouTube, and it'll be on Podomatic real soon. I know a lot of our listeners are still having issues with Podomatic. I haven't heard back from Podomatic yet. I'm being ignored. I don't know why that is. But I'm not going to say any more about that, because I'll only start getting annoyed. But I'll put it on Podomatic anyway. And I'll talk to you again tomorrow at 7 p.m. UK time. That's 7 p.m. UK time for Thursday's programme. All right? Thursday's programme tomorrow. I was going to say something tonight about Ken O'Keefe, that wretched criminal con man who put the fraudulent One World Citizen Pyramid Scheme on. He's been tweeting again. He's been out asking for money. This is the guy who ran a fraudulent scheme called Ship to Gaza some years ago and pocketed tens of thousands of pounds in a project that never made it. 2.5 years ago, he got $115,000 for a One World Citizen scheme, which has never materialised. He's out asking people for more money. This is a public service announcement. Ken O'Keefe is a liar, a fraud, a criminal, a con man. Do not give him your money, ever, under any circumstances. All right? All right. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. I'll speak to you again tomorrow at 7 p.m. Until then, it's a bye from me. Bye now. How many of your people out there been hurt in some kind of love affair? And how many times do you swear that you never love again? How many lonely sleepless nights? How many lies? How many fights? And why would you want to put yourself through all of that again? Love is pain, I hear you say. Love is a cruel and bitter way of paying you back for all the faith you ever had in your brain. Or could it be that what you need the most can leave you feeling just like a ghost? You never want to feel so sad and lost again. One day you could be looking